Health and happiness are synonymous. If you're healthy, you're happy. If you're happy, you're healthy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dimple Jangra. I'm your podcast host, and I welcome you to A Gut Story. This is a podcast, a platform where we're going to discuss healthy everything. A healthy body, healthy mind, healthy emotion, healthy energetics, and a healthy spiritual journey. We're going to also discuss stories of courage, grit, confidence, discipline, and patience that helped several people overcome tragic events in their life and physical trauma. And we're also going to learn from several natural sciences like Ayurveda, naturopathy, homeopathy, yoga, on how to reset our body back to good health and bring ourselves back closer to nature. Welcome to A Gut Story with yours truly, Dr. Dimple.
Dimple, you know, when I read your story,
yeah,
you know, coming from an investment banking and also being a journalist, and now what you do is, you know, you're helping people, coaching them and making them understand what is Ayurveda, integrating that. What was your reason coming from an investment banker, journalist and being an Ayurvedic health coach?
It's been quite a journey, actually. I'm glad we're starting off with this question. You know, in fact, the first chapter in my book also talks about my personal journey, and I'm usually a very private person. I don't discuss my private life. But I was asked by the editor to share my journey, because otherwise people will not understand and believe why I had to leave top-notch career in investment banking to take up a career in Ayurveda. So Ayurveda is not a career choice. It's a life choice for me. It started off as a CSR, corporate social responsibility, to give back to the society, because at the peak of my career, when I had everything, I was heading $550 million worth of transactions in New York City. I was heading some, you know, cross-border mergers and acquisition transactions in toll roads, hydropower projects, in a male-dominated industry, on Wall Street, rubbing shoulders with some of the most powerful people. And I had everything I ever wanted, you know, like good money and, you know, globe-trotting lifestyle, business class, living in high-rise hotels, working in Chicago, living in New York, and, you know, trotting everywhere. At the peak of my career, I felt like, you know, that there was something missing in my life. You know, there was a vacuum. And I couldn't exactly explain what was happening. It was some kind of a existential crisis where I was trying to figure out, who am I? What am I doing here? And what is the purpose or meaning of my existence? All of us have a reason and a purpose to exist. We need to just dig deeper and find that. So I took a sabbatical from my career in investment banking and returned to India. And it was an indefinite sabbatical to figure out what I wanted. And I spent 2 years traveling around the world while keeping India as a base. I went to 10 countries actually, in 11 months.
This was when? Decade ago or?
Exactly a decade ago, I'd say. This was in 2015 when I came back to India. And I said, okay, let's, you know, figure out what I want to do and where I want to spend more time in. And I went to like 10 countries. I went to like Paris and Antwerp, Amsterdam, Zurich, Istanbul at the peak of the, you know, civil unrest. I was in Bali, Singapore, Hong Kong, Dubai. I was trying to figure out what works for me. And then the 11th country I did was India. I started visiting the countryside, Tamil Nadu, Kerala, Karnataka, Rajasthan, Gujarat. And the more time I spent there, I started feeling unconditionally happy. You know, I was able to fill up that vacuum inside of me. I was able to feel happy. I was able to feel healthy. I slept really well. I ate really well. I was able to address my insomnia, which I had for almost 10, 11 years. I was able to address my massive appetite issues, you know, that I had. I couldn't eat food. Maybe I had undiagnosed anorexia as a child. I don't know. No, but I had massive health issues because I was not able to eat well. I was able to heal from all of those issues by just living in the countryside for a few weeks at a time. And I wanted to bottle this happiness and start selling it to the world, because I'm a businesswoman. I understand the business sense of it, right? And the closest I could come to bottling that happiness was putting Ayurvedic herbs in a bottle, because health and happiness are synonymous. If you're healthy, you're happy. If you're happy, you're healthy. So that's how the whole journey started. And I started the Ayurveda clinic about 6.5 years ago in 2017, November. Hired a team of Ayurvedic doctors, therapists, nutritionists, even biotech researchers. We kept, you know, like hiring different kinds of people, forensic science researchers also at one point in time. All permutations and combinations to marry Western science with Eastern sciences to see how we can arrive at a holistic approach to health. And my role was to be a health entrepreneur, you know, behind the scenes, funding the project, making sure that my doctors get paid on time, you know, and everything went out of my pockets in the first 2 to 4 years because we didn't make any money. My job was primarily behind the scenes. But when I noticed that there was a gap between the doctors and patients, that patients were coming to the clinic doing free consultations that we were offering to them. We didn't charge a penny in the first year. And they would still walk away without taking the medicines, without actually practicing what the doctors advised. And I was trying to understand what's going on here. So there was a huge gap between the doctors and patients.
You mean what the doctors prescribed and what the doctors advised, the patients were not taking it. Or they were not listening and following it up.
They
Is that
were
what
not able to understand.
They were not able to understand.
They were not able to listen. So, you know, you see this in couples also, right? One couple is shouting, the other couple is also shouting. They're not able to listen and understand each other.
There was a communication gap.
Huge. And then I started addressing the communication gap. You know, just when the patient's about to leave the clinic, I would grab the patient, you know, politely saying that, can you give me a few minutes? You know, I want to understand your feedback. Why do you not want to take the medicine? And the patients would say something like, I didn't understand the diagnosis. What do you mean I have a kapha prakriti, vata vikriti imbalance? I didn't understand. So then I said, okay. I started talking to the doctors and they started teaching me and training me in the process, my doctors. I had about four doctors at that point in time. In fact, Dr. Rani, Dr. Namita, Dr. Vinodni, Dr. Radhakrishna Katha. They started explaining to me what they were explaining
to the patient.
To the patient, but they didn't have the time to sit and teach a patient what they were saying. Okay, they have a 30-minute or a 40-minute consultation. They're able to diagnose the disease and prescribe the correct medicines, but they don't have the time to teach Ayurveda to the patient in that short span of time. So I started explaining to the patients, what is Pancha Mahabhut? What are the three doshas? What is a prakriti? What is a vikriti? Why are they experiencing an imbalance? How do we address an imbalance? Why was this medicine given? I started explaining that. Patients started taking the medicines. And I saw good results. Patients started giving feedback that they were able to recover from this and that. Then after a few months, some of the patients came back with the same symptoms. And I was like, why have they come back? And then the doctor said, you know, medicine is of no use if the diet is wrong. They're still eating the wrong foods and they're back with the same symptoms, be it GERD or acidity or bloating or indigestion, constipation. Then we hired some nutritionists to address that issue. And we noticed there was a gap even with the way the nutritionists were approaching it and the Ayurvedic doctors were approaching it. So integrated modern nutrition is based on the concept of protein, carbs, vegetables, vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin...
Micronutrients, K. Yes.
Right? They have no understanding of prakriti vikriti imbalances.
What gives acidity? What gives bloating?
What are the triggers?
Exactly.
What is a pungent food? What is a spicy food? What is a sweet, sour, salty? Why should a kapha eat bitter, astringent, pungent and not eat sweet, sour, salty? And why should a vata eat the exact opposite of a kapha? They had no understanding of that. So I started training the nutritionists also in the concept of Ayurveda. And I started writing diet charts for my patients from the understanding of the diagnosis and symptoms. And I must have written about 1,000 free diet charts in the first 2 years. COVID happened. I started teaching my patients what I learned from my doctors. In a way, I became the communication bridge between the doctors and the patients. That's where my role was, dumbing down complex concepts and explaining it to the patient in an easy, digestible form so that they can apply to their daily life and also take the concepts back home and practice it on a daily basis. So it shouldn't be like you get sick and then you go to a doctor to cure the sickness. Okay, that's curative healthcare. Ayurveda is primarily a preventive healthcare life science. But because of lack of time, we do not have the tools or the platform to teach preventive healthcare. Ayurveda should be practiced in every home. It should be a domestic practice where mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, everyone is aware of the concepts of Ayurveda, of the concepts of food chemistry, viruddhahar, of the concept of dosha imbalances, dinacharya, ritucharya. These are concepts that should be practiced at home so that they can prevent sickness from the root cause. They can help the child recover from common ailments at home, a cold, a cough, a sinus or a fever. Of course, if it's a chronic infection, you need to run to the hospital. So then I realized there was a huge gap in the lifestyle itself and in the education itself. That's where I started studying more and researching more. And in the process, I ended up writing a thesis on Ayurveda for daily life, not Ayurveda for disease care. Ayurveda for disease care is what you specialize in, what my doctor specializes in. But that huge gap that there was is Ayurveda for daily life. How can I practice Ayurveda on a daily basis right from the time I wake up? Oil pulling, gargling, tongue scraping, brushing with a bitter toothpaste.
Dinacharya, the concept.
Sweet thought. Yeah. little concepts like that. How can I detoxify at home? Can I do my own Abhyangam? Can I do my own Nasyam? Can I do my own ear pulling?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Introducing oils, Karna Purana, as you call it. Can I do navel therapy at home?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do Jal Neti, which is a yoga therapy? Can I do Pad Abhyangam?
Mm-hmm.
Shiro Abhyangam? These were concepts that were helping our patients living across the world, across different continents, repair the body at home without having to come to India.
Mm-hmm.
At least the common health issues were addressed. For a major health issue, of course, they have to come down, stay at the clinic, stay at your retreat and do the treatments. So that's where my role started, and it ended up becoming like a full-fledged thesis.
Mm.
And I submitted my thesis, you know, to a couple of universities. I've submitted it to Medical University in Chennai. I'm waiting for my final PhD thesis. And I ended up getting two honorary doctorates from other universities for that. So I'm not a medical doctor. I am the gap or the bridge between the medical doctor and the patient.
Mm.
And I hope that, you know, this by itself becomes a profession.
I totally understand. And what is happening, the ability of a patient to absorb and deconstruct the medical information today,
yeah,
it's becoming a big challenge. And now I also see two worlds. One is people are overdosed with medical information and they don't know what is to be taken. At the same time, there are also information that if I use it, and people cherry pick what is the best information that they like and they just follow it. And they think what else is not there is creating confusion. So I really appreciate what you have done, because when I see many of the Ayurvedic doctors, when they communicate, it becomes very filled with technical jargons. And that's where we miss the bus of helping people really understand and integrate Ayurveda into their life. So Dimple, what was your challenge, even though you were able to learn from the doctors, nutritionists, and you tried to, you know, capsule it in such a way that a common man in today's urban living population was able to integrate that. Even then, I'm sure you faced a lot of resistance because no matter what, at the end of the day, the key essence of, you know, new age living problem is they don't slow down.
Yeah.
So technically, at the end of the day, we tell them, just slow down. Mm-hmm. That's the underlying fact. But slowing down in different aspects, mindful eating, go to sleep early and do everything mindful, slowly, and also have a schedule for things. This is basics of the basic foundation of what we are trying to educate. But my question, what was the biggest challenge that you found and how did you crack that? I'm talking about when patients come, no, I can't sleep early. It's going to be a challenge. How can I go to sleep? And I love to eat out. How can I stop that? When you tell them you have to eliminate this, I'm sure you found a lot of resistance. So how did you manage with that? And I'm sure without breaking that, those results wouldn't have come.
No. You know, there's a reason why we have such a high success rate in my clinic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I was discussing, you know, we have a new challenge that there's a waiting period of 10 to 12 days for patients now to be able to see us. And of course, you know, we're trying to circumnavigate that situation. In the beginning, there were no patients in my clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like most of the patients, I mean, most of the doctors and clinics, they start like that.
Yeah. So my doctors were sitting idle.
Mm.
I had four doctors in the beginning when I started out, and then there were permutations and combinations. You know, they had different schedules and all. For the first 1 year, it was a challenge to even bring the patient inside the clinic because their perception of Ayurveda was that it's slow, it's traditional, it has not been proven and validated by Western medicine.
Mm.
That was the initial challenges. I went to the farmer's market where they sell organic vegetables and fruits. Okay. I begged the founder of the lady, Ms. Kavita Mukhi, to give me a stall.
Mm.
She said, what will you do? I said, you give me a stall. So every Sunday, I would start at the farmer's market at 9 in the morning. And I would stay there till 3:30 in the afternoon, distributing pamphlets to anybody who was willing to listen to me. Right now, I'm sitting in this plush cabin and doing an interview with you where I'm able to communicate with maybe 10,000 plus people who are listening to the podcast. That wasn't the case when I started out. I would stand at the farmer's market, distribute a pamphlet, and I would ask the person, have you heard about Ayurveda? Can I tell you a little bit about Ayurveda? How does it work?
Yeah.
In a day, I would probably talk to about 4 to 8 people or 10 people sometimes. If I got lucky, 12 people. No food break, no water break. You're talking continuously. And then one out of those 10 people would show up to the clinic saying, I was really convinced with what you said, and I really want to give this an honest attempt. Can you help me?
Yeah.
Then I would take them to the doctor. The doctor would do the consult. And after the consult, I would bring them back to my cabin. I would explain and deconstruct everything that the doctor has said. That was the resistance I faced in the first 1 year. Why Ayurveda itself?
Mm.
Okay. Then the second year, we faced resistance in nutrition. Okay, I'll take the medicines, but I will not change my diet. Then I started teaching nutrition to the patient. Something as simple as, you know, fruits takes 3 hours in your body. Vegetables take 6 hours in your body. Grains and pulses takes 18 hours in your body. Meat, seafood, eggs takes about 72 hours in your body. Packaged foods, processed foods, if it can survive on the shelf for 6 months, it can survive in your gut also for 6 months. So it's right now sitting in your gut, the packet of chips that you've eaten 2 weeks ago. So are you okay with that? Then they would sit and think, no, I'm not okay with it. Then I would also ask them this simple question. You know, I would ask them questions from a perspective of psychology. You have to address the deep-rooted neurosis that is buried in their subconscious mind. Why are they behaving in such a manner? Why are they junk eating? Why are they emotional eating? Why is it a comfort eating habit? Why are they addicted to alcohol and cigarettes? You have to address the root cause. So I started counseling patients. Instead of doing a 30-minute diet consult, it would end up being a one-hour conversation where I would spend 30 minutes deconstructing their own psychology to them. The first challenge was deconstructing Ayurveda. The second challenge was deconstructing the patient's habits itself. Yesterday, in fact, I had a consult with a patient who was so passionate about his consultation with us that he sent literally a 2-page essay on his lifestyle, eating habits, hoping that we will find the problem area and say that this is a problem, that's why he got sick. And when I went through his notes, it was so perfect. His diet, his juicing, his fruits, his nuts, his vegetables, he was vegetarian. Everything was perfect. And I told him something. I said, no matter how expensive the medicine is, no matter how complex and advanced a diet plan that I give you, you will not recover. He said, why? I said, look at what you're drinking after eating a clean diet. You're drinking alcohol every day with a few cigarettes every day. If you're going to consume poison, how can I treat you? You're consuming poison.
And he's not aware of that.
He is well aware of it, but he didn't think it was important to address it. He said, I'm eating a clean diet. I'm juicing in the morning. I'm eating fruits and nuts. So on a whole day, he's eating clean.
It out.
But why was he drinking in the night? He said, I'm going through a lot of stress. I said, so when you're stressed, are you going to drink poison? To suppress the stress? He's like, no. I said, that's exactly what you're doing. What's a synonym to alcohol? Poison. When you go to a bar, what do you ask a person? What's your choice of poison? That's what the bartender is asking you. So I said, you're drinking poison on a daily basis, hoping to suppress your pain. And you're coming to the doctor saying, give me a medicine to recover from the poison I'm drinking on a daily basis. How's it going to work? So it hit him hard, you know, that conversation. He said, I understand what you're saying. I said, you tell me, how healthy do you want to be? Do you want to be this healthy, this healthy, this much healthy? You decide how much healthy you want to be. I'll give you a diet plan. And you decide how much of the diet plan you want to follow. If you follow 20% of the diet plan, you'll be 20% healthy. If you follow 100% of the diet plan, you'll be 100% healthy. So the decision is yours. Our job is just to give the diet. The minute you put the responsibility and the ball back in the patient's court, they become serious. Otherwise, what happens? The mentality is, doctors are God. They will fix me. I don't know how, but they will fix me. So we put the problem onto the doctor's lap. And, you know, my parents had that same mentality and attitude when I was growing up. Every time I was sick, I was in the hospital. They would run me to the hospital. Whatever the doctor said, they would pay up for it and rush me into a surgery. Like this, I ended up in surgery 4 times before I turned 18. We constantly put the burden of recovery on the doctor, which is not right. The burden of recovery should be equally shared responsibility between the doctor and patient, where the doctor is giving the right directions on where to go and the patient is giving 100% commitment and discipline that I will follow every word of what you said. No questions asked for 90 days. I will see results. If I don't see results, I will come back and question your methodology, your approach. But until then, at least give it an honest attempt. Another patient got back this morning, you know, saying that, you know, I've done the Panchakarma treatment, I've done the medicines, but you know, psoriasis, it has lightened a little, but it hasn't fully gone. And I asked her, I said, how long have you had psoriasis? She said, few years. I said, how long have you taken the medicines? 15 days. How can you recover in 15 days from a disease that has been plaguing your body for 5 years? The rule with recovery is, if the disease has been in your body for 5 years, you need at least 2.5 years to recover from the disease. by correcting your diet and lifestyle and staying disciplined on that without a single cheat meal for 2.5 years.
Mm.
Only then you address the root cause of the disease and prevent a relapse.
Mm.
But if you're looking for immediate results, go ahead and take painkillers, steroids, antibiotics, suppress the symptoms. You'll not see anything on the surface, but the disease is still boiling inside of you. Mm. It's still growing. So you decide which one you want. She said, no, I want to address the root cause. I don't want to relapse. I said, if you don't want to relapse, you will stay put on this diet plan and the medication for at least 3 months, 6 months. You are seeing results, but you're looking for instant results, which will not happen. You want permanent results. You give a permanent commitment to this new lifestyle.
Yeah.
You have to address the psychology of the client. The minute you address that, I assure you, the placebo effect is sometimes far more stronger than the medicine that the doctors administer.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the patient decides, I want to get better, nobody can stop that patient. But if the patient is not ready to change his or her habits, diet and lifestyle, no matter how expensive the medicine is that you've given, it will not show results.
It's absolutely true. I still remember some patients when they come and, you know, first question we ask, so what are your health challenges? What are the health problems you're going through? Some patients would tell, you are the doctor, you should tell me. Okay, then why did you come here? Unless you answer a few of my questions, how will I be able to know? And
yes,
the moment you know this, you know this patient is going to trouble you the most.
Yes, of course. We face those, you know. And let me tell you something, okay? I've had some amazing, pleasant experiences.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. You know, there's two sides, but...
Yeah. I've had some very pleasant experiences and we've had some unpleasant experiences also. You know, for example, one patient was like badgering the doctor nonstop, you know. Heal me, heal me, heal me. And it went on for like 45 minutes and I was overhearing the conversation. Then finally, it was time for the patient to come for a diet consult with me. This is what I specialize in. I specialize in nutrition, preventive healthcare. I'm not a medical doctor. I specialize in food, in lifestyle, in psychology, in food chemistry. The minute he came to me and I went through his symptoms and I said, sir, you're drinking poison on a daily basis. He's like, what am I? I said, yes, look at this. Then I showed him where he was going wrong. I said, you're drinking poison here. You're drinking poison here. You're drinking poison here. He's like, oh, I said, how will the doctor heal you, sir? Mm-hmm. You're deliberately drinking poison. You're deliberately self-harming yourself. You're becoming self-destructive. And then he burst out into tears. He said, yeah, that's true. I am destroying myself because I'm unhappy with my life. I said, how can a doctor heal you? Unless you're willing to take that first step. So that's one, okay? That started off as an unpleasant experience, but ended well. And the patient then, you know, made a very big promise saying, I will change my life. Another case was like, you know, these young children who came to me. Those are probably my best memories, you know. Young boy, I've said this, you know, in a couple of interviews before also, because he was like something, he was something of a story that inspired me also. 13-year-old boy, his name was Indy. His mother, Stina, is from London and she contacted me and she had been my student for a while and I didn't know about it. She said, you know, my son has thyroid. He's 13 years old. He's also obese and he has other health issues, you know, severe health issues. Can you give me a diet? I said, can you put him on the call, please? You know, I'd like to talk to him directly. 13-year-old boy. I'm sure he can understand what I'm speaking. We had like a 45-minute talk maybe. And I kept giving him facts about the gut health. What aerated drinks does to the gut. It, you know, strips away the mucosa. What packaged foods does. It can survive in the gut also for a few months because of the preservatives. What, you know, unhealthy foods like uncooked meat and seafood does, you know, E. coli and a whole lot of diseases like cysticercosis and tapeworms and stuff like that. When I started giving him all of that information, that it was weakening his thyroid gland and hence it was making him slower. It was also giving him brain fog. He's not able to run on a soccer field. He's not able to compete with the other boys because of this. And I said, do you want to compete with them? Do you want to be class first? Do you want to do this, this, this? He's like, yes, yes, yes. I said, I'll give you a diet. You give it a try. And I forgot about that case, you know, after the consult. Almost 9 or 10 months later, Stina got back in touch saying that not just him, the entire family changed their diet and lifestyle to support his recovery process. And within 9 to 10 months, his doctor took him off the thyroid medicine because he had fully healed. That was one case. Another young girl came. Mother brought her. She was overweight, had massive fibroids, and she was barely 16 years old and having serious health issues with her period cycles. Mother brought her forcibly. She was whining and grumbling, you know, in the doctor's room saying, I don't know why we are here and all that. So I brought her in the front. I said, come, you and I will do a consult. And the mother was sitting in the background and I told her, you stay quiet. You don't be the one to give her advice because by default, children have a rebel attitude. We don't like what our parents say. So I said, you stay out of the picture for some time. Let me talk to her. I spoke to her, gave her the consult, finished. Forgot about the case. A month later, she walks into my cabin, takes the front row seat and sits with me saying, I'm ready for the follow-up consult. And I'm looking at her, I'm like, wait, who's this person? You know, because she was beyond recognition in 1 month. And I'm looking at the mother and I recognized and I said, what's the update? She lost 7-8 kgs in just 1 month. And her fibroids shrunk because she changed her diet and lifestyle. She was so obese that in 1 month she saw visible results. The thing with patients like this, if you give them a motivation, if you understand where it hurts, it's like a lion with a thorn in the flesh. The lion is roaring and roaring and crying. You can't give medicines to the lion to stop it from roaring. You have to address the pain point. Where is the thorn striking the flesh or eating into the flesh? Remove it. You know, it could be something as simple as, you know, I've seen women come to me repeatedly for consultation. To the point that second or third time I actually asked them, do you like being sick? And she's like, what? I said, do you like being sick? You're coming back with the same symptoms again and again. And she got emotional and I said, are you doing it to get attention from someone? And she burst out crying and said, my husband doesn't pay me attention. My in-laws are troubling me. My children don't listen to me. I said, so you're creating diseases to escape those problems. Diseases have a psychosomatic origin. Now, this is not true for everyone. It's true for some people. So you have to address the root cause of that disease. You know, Ayurveda says that all diseases have a psychosomatic origin. But are we really addressing it? We need to go deeper than just a consultation, than just a diagnosis. And I think that's where having a holistic approach really helps. You know, if you can have an Ayurvedic doctor and you can have a naturopathy dietitian, you can have an integrated nutritionist, you can have a sports rehabilitation expert or a yoga teacher, okay? You can have a counseling, emotional counselor on board. We have all of those in our clinic. Then you can keep referring that patient to the right advisor or counselor till that patient heals. That's how holistic health should be. And I think a lot of hospitals now, in India at least, have understood, a lot of Western medicine practitioners have understood that we cannot have a one-sided approach to disease. It has to be holistic. And they have actually kept Ayurvedic treatment centers within their hospital.
I know many allopathic hospitals, they do that. Yeah. Even Apollo, they recently acquired an Ayurvedic firm and they have that.
Why are they doing that? Because they've realized the importance of digestive health, gut health, and cleansing the colon and doing a panchakarma cleanse. I have a lot of allopathy doctors who are now sending their patients to us saying, the medicines will not show results unless we clean up their gut. Can you clean up their gut and send them back to us? Sure. And the patient is actually responding to the medicines much better the minute we clean up their system from inside. That's what Ayurveda does. It scrubs the body clean from inside versus outside. But that's a holistic approach that I think everybody should have. Marrying the best of both worlds.
Hey guys, if you like this episode, don't forget to leave a comment below so we can learn how to improve ourselves. Like, subscribe, and definitely share this with your loved ones, your friends, family, and relatives so you can become an influencer of good health in their lives. Until my next episode, here's wishing you unconditional happiness, love, forgiveness, kindness, empathy, compassion in everything that you do. Here's Dr. Dimple Jangra signing off.